coming. It's rolling around a bend.
Each weekday, a member of the community is invited to coffee at KYUK to discuss news and information relevant to Bethel and the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Coffee at KYUK is where our community connects.
Hola, waka, chakma, all across the tundra. I'm also shouting out to the Yukon and the coast. Grady Deaton here, coffee at KYUK. And as usual, excited and sharing excitement with you. This morning, I'm excited because maybe you, like me, had a driveway moment this week when you heard Greg Kim's story on the Korean experience in Bethel. Well, this morning, our own Olivia Eberts will be interviewing Greg Kim about this feature. Joining me now, Olivia and Greg. Good morning.
Thanks, Grady. Good morning. My coworker, Greg Kim, he's been in Bethel for just about 2 years. And during his time here, you guys have probably heard, he's reported on almost everything from city council to devastating erosion to chicken massacres. His work in the YK Delta has really brought a good community together. His feature story this week on Korean immigrants in Bethel hits perhaps closest to home. It's because Greg and his family are themselves Korean immigrants. And this week, Greg finally got to tell this story. It paints a really rich landscape tableau of all the reasons for and the experience of Korean immigrants in Bethel. I've gotten to see Greg in the background working really hard on this story over the past month, and I've sensed some of the fruitful internal struggles that can really come from telling a story that's close to your own heart. So I'm really excited to have Greg here this morning to talk more about the process of his story with me. Greg, thank you so much for coming on the show today and for the ride this morning.
Thanks, Olivia, and thanks for that incredibly generous intro.
So thank you so much for your story. It was really well-researched and super deeply reported. I'm curious, how much did you know about this subject before diving into this story?
Yeah, and I think you're talking about the subject of Koreans in general in Bethel. And, you know, when I first got in Bethel, I think I had a similar reaction to a lot of people do. They're like, I saw all the Koreans here, and I was like, what the heck? I was not expecting to see so many Koreans here. And I immediately became curious because, you know, obviously I'm Korean. Early on, I went to the Korean church here in Bethel and trying to investigate that question, trying to get the story and trying to understand the community of Koreans here. And I didn't get a ton of information in those kind of reconnaissance missions. I went the first time and, you know, I let a few weeks slide in between. And when I came back to the Korean church, you know, you might, if you've ever been to church, you might have the experience of they're like, where have you been the past few weeks? I didn't get as much information out of those missions as I wanted, but the curiosity has lasted, from that initial time when I got to Bethel. And I've wanted to do this story for a really long time, because I'm a Korean immigrant, but I think, you know, there are so many different immigration stories, and this immigration story of a lot of Koreans in Bethel is so unlike my own in a lot of ways, and so I was just really curious how similar and how dissimilar we are in some ways.
So I think we covered this a little bit, but maybe let's go a little more into depth. Why now? What opened the gates for you, you know, this past month to tell the story?
Yeah, I mean, it was really great because you did that story on Bethel's Video World closing. And that was actually kind of the catalyst for why I decided to do this story now after having been thinking about it for almost the past 2 years. What I had heard in my early reconnaissance missions was that the original Video World owner, Gil Soo-ha, was a really important figure in the Korean community. And my initial thinking was that there were one or several, like, Korean godfathers who, like, had brought in a bunch of Koreans who had like recruited maybe their family members or friends, and a few people had kind of like brought in all the Koreans. And I thought, oh, like I'd been hearing about Kil Soo-ha and his importance in the Korean community. So I thought, oh, maybe he was one of the godfathers of the Korean community. And so when you did that story, Olivia, on Video World Closing, I was like, okay, this is a great time to reach out to him maybe and see how far I can reach back into the Korean community in Bethel.
And in the story that I did, Video World closed down, and I know you mentioned in your piece that some Koreans have been hit pretty hard by this pandemic, some of their businesses. I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit more, just give a little summary. Like, it feels especially timely right now because of that. Did you come across a lot of people who had been struggling during this pandemic?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was mentioned in the story, but a lot of Koreans in Bethel work in the restaurant and cab industries. And just for a little bit of quantification, when I was talking to restaurant owners or cab drivers, they both kind of said, you know, business is down anywhere from like 30-50%. And you know, they're getting by. The cab drivers mentioned that anywhere from a third to a half of cab drivers are not on the road compared to before the pandemic. One, because, you know, business is down, so you have this less incentive to work because you're not making as much money. But also then you compare that with the risk of the virus, and you're like, well, and you have to understand that a lot of the Korean population in Bethel is older and more susceptible to the risk of the virus. So taking all those calculations into play, a lot of cab drivers aren't on the road. A lot of restaurant owners aren't making as much money because, you know, obviously people aren't dining in. So it's definitely hit the Korean community hard. I mean, of course, it's hit everybody hard, but it's hit the Korean community hard.
So what are some of the surprises that came to you from telling this story? How are things maybe a little different than you imagined them to be when you went in?
Yeah, so you know how I mentioned my initial intuition was that there are like one or several Korean godfathers, and what I found was actually, well, I wasn't able to reach back into like the first Korean immigrant into Bethel. That was my dream. That was my dream for the story. But I wasn't able to find the original Korean godfather. But what surprised me was how many Koreans came to Bethel off of a newspaper ad. That was so surprising to me. And I did not mention that in my story just because it was a novelty. It was actually it was a large percentage of Koreans who came that way. Of the Koreans I talked to, a little less than half had come here that way. And that was so surprising to me because, you know, I mean, moving to Bethel from the lower 48 is already a big decision, but to move to Bethel from the lower 48 with no information other than what's on a newspaper ad, that seemed pretty crazy to me.
And were you able to track down the ad?
I did reach out to some of the Korean newspapers in L.A. and New York, which is where a lot of people said they saw these ads. I didn't get a reply back. But, you know, I did talk to people about what the contents of the ad looked like. You know, it was just a very, very brief job description. You're going to deliver, or you're going to be a taxi driver, or you're going to work in a restaurant. You're going to get paid this much, and, you know, we'll feed you and house you. That's basically all that people said. It's pretty wild.
My, how the times have changed. So are there any challenges that you didn't expect, while telling this story?
I don't know about, that I didn't expect, but one challenge that I did expect and I did find, was that, I was having a little trouble getting people to open up completely. Like, I was looking for a lot of emotion. I mean, it's an emotional story. A lot of the Korean population in Bethel lived somewhere else. They tried to start a small business in another part of the United States, a bigger metropolitan city, and a lot of them had their businesses fail for whatever reason. And I expected a lot of emotion. But I can't speak for the entire Korean population, but my dad is kind of, I would characterize him as kind of an emotional brick. you know, and I don't think that's super strange in Korean men population. So I did encounter that. It was kind of when I was hearing these stories, they'd kind of be told in like, this happened, you know, kind of like bullet points. And I was hoping to get more emotion. And I think that's something, you know, as I get. And also, you have to understand, you know, there's kind of this emotional wall that some Korean men have. But then also, there's kind of this cultural thing where I'm younger than them a lot, and in a lot of cases by a lot, right? In Korean culture, there's kind of a hierarchy between older and younger. If you speak to elders in a almost different, I don't want to say language, but you add a suffix at the end of every sentence to designate that you're talking to an elder, right? And in that kind of hierarchy, I think it's kind of understood that, like, you know, when you're older and you're talking to a younger person, you know, you might not be as vulnerable. You know, might not, you know, reveal all of yourself. So I think that was some of the challenges of getting all the emotion that is inherently in these stories. I don't know if I was able to access 100%.
I definitely felt like it was emotional, and it tugged those heartstrings for me. But I wanted to talk a little more about language since you mentioned that. I guess I have two questions here. First, is that suffix one that you've had a lot of practice and comfort using in your life? Is that something you use with your parents as well? I know you have an interesting linguistic experience because you came to the United States at a pretty young age, and I know you've been speaking Korean the whole time, but mostly with your parents. And I think a lot of us don't think about the linguistic relationship we have with our parents, but we're probably using far less vocab with them. You know, my vocab with my parents growing up was sort of just like, can you drop me off at the mall? And saying as little as possible. So I imagine that kind of affected some of your language. And I'm curious to hear about your experience of using Korean in this context, which is something you probably hadn't done before. Yeah, if you could just talk to that a little bit.
Sure, yeah. You know, yeah, exactly. I learned Korean. I relearned Korean. I came to the United States when I was 4, so I had learned language, but then I completely forgot it, and then I had to relearn it. And I relearned it talking to my parents. And I had adopted a lot of American culture by that time. And you know, a lot of Korean children talk to their parents in that like a respect suffix that I was talking about. I didn't. I mean, and it's not uncommon. Even in Korea, some kids will talk to their parents without that respect suffix. And you know, in American culture, it's kind of more you're closer in status to your parents than in Korea. But anyway, to your other question on because I've learned Korean from my parents, you're exactly right. I have a limited vocabulary. I'd say I have kind of like a second to third grade vocabulary of Korean, which is, you know, totally passable. I can talk to anybody. But that's one of the reasons kind of why I stopped going to the Korean church is because the sermons, I couldn't understand all of it just because, like, the type of words and, like, the breadth of vocabulary was bigger than what I had. And in some of these conversations, I did run into that. I'd have to kind of talk in roundabout ways to get around the words that I didn't know, you know. And so that did lend to some challenges. But everybody was so gracious with speaking to me and patient, and it was a really good time.
So I want to ask you if this experience of telling this story, did it make you look more at your own background and maybe the background of your parents too?
Definitely. This was definitely an introspective story for me. Because I think, when I immigrated when I was 4, so my immigration story is a lot different even from my parents, right? I didn't have the same struggles that they were experiencing because I was shielded as a child. And it did make me think about what they went through a little bit more, right? To immigrate at an older age is so much more difficult than to immigrate as a child. And what it made me think about was just everything that they went through. And like I mentioned, if I asked my dad, you know, tell me your immigration story, he'd be like, I moved to America when in 1998, big success. that'd be the story. But I know that there's a lot more because they've mentioned in passing, you know, that there were times when he was worried that we would lose our residency status in the United States and have to go back to Korea. And, you know, that never crossed my mind as a child, obviously, you know. that sounds so scary to think about right now. As an adult with a family that you have to take care of, it definitely made me think about the perspective of my parents a lot more.
In this story, you talk a little bit about some violence and racism that's increased or maybe seemingly increased during the pandemic. But you also hint, and as evidenced by some of the testimony in your piece, this isn't really new. Do you feel like this story is more timely now? And was that any of that motivation for your telling the story?
You know, it definitely is timely right now because it's being covered. I have no idea. It was not my motivation for telling this story. And honestly, I had, this sounds super strange, but I had considered not telling that part of the story, even though it's such a large part of the story. And the reason is because it kind of needs its own story all on its own, you know what I mean? I definitely did not cover it, to the depth that, it needs, but, I think there needs to be another fuller story, looking at some of those issues.
And on that note, we'll have to wrap it up with Greg, but hopefully we'll be able to look forward to some more reporting on that, which is another really critical piece of this puzzle. So thank you so much to Greg for coming on the show this morning. And thanks to all you listeners out there. My guest is Greg Kim. You can listen to Greg's story on KYUK's website or on our Facebook page. Thank you for tuning into Coffee at KYUK. I was your host, Olivia Eberts, and we will see you tomorrow.
Join us with Greg and LKSC Superintendent Kimberly Hankins tomorrow, and YKHC Update with Anna Rose and Dr. Ellen Hodges on Friday on Coffee at KYUK. That leaves me just one thing left to say to listeners, and that's don't forget to be awesome to each other.
Each weekday, a member of the community is invited to coffee at KYUK to discuss news and information relevant to Bethel and the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Coffee at KYUK is where our community connects.